Hello and welcome to Metacall episode 228. I'm Corey and here's Daryl.
Yo.
That's the echo. You're in a cave. Thought it might catch you.
Oh, I'm in a cave?
That is some manual effect right there. That's how they used to do it in the olden days.
Oh, I thought I was actually in a cave. I had bad audio.
No. See, it it was that effective. I really made you believe. It's like back in the day when, you know, people had to get the horse sounds to get the two coconuts and they clocked them together. But
anyways,
I digress. We should talk about magic.
We should talk about magic. It's pretty big.
Hey, it's a good thing we waited till Wednesday this week, because if we recorded yesterday, we wouldn't know about the banned and restricted update that just came out of nowhere today. And I know, Daryl, you don't care too much about historic, but...
From the top rope.
It's a big deal. It's a big thing. And I'm sure that there are implications of this BNR update that just affect Magic overall. And, you know, just the future of the game. They're very historic specific, but just in terms of like how they're going to handle this stuff going forward and see if they inspire some creativity in other formats too. I don't know if it's possible. We can discuss that when we get there. But right off the bat, we do need to thank our wonderful sponsor, ManaTraders.com, for supporting us. Use the promo code CardKnockLifePodcast, all one word, for 14% off your first 3 months at checkout. Again, that is CardKnockLifePodcast, all one word, for 14% off your subscription at checkout. So we'll also get into a little bit modern today. We haven't talked about modern for a little bit. And
let's do the historic announcement first.
Start with historic. Yeah. I'm all for it. You want to read it off?
I have the list. I don't have the full announcement in front of me.
Yeah, that's all we need, really.
But the following cards are banned or rebalanced in historic. That's the important one that Corey was talking about that is historically relevant. Haha, doosh. All right. Doosh. So Tybalt's Trickery is banned in historic. Memory Lapse is suspended. Brainstorm is banned in historic from suspended. 5 digital-only cards are being rebalanced. Davriel's Withering and Davriel's Soul Broker's third ability now only affect target feature and opponent controls. That probably fixed some really annoying combo with Davriel's Withering, I'm guessing.
It does.
Faceless Agent is now a 2-2 from a 2-1. Sarkhan Wonder to Shiv's second ability is now a +1 from a 0. And then Submersive Acolyte now costs 1 black-black from black... from black, or sorry... 1 black from black is a 2-3 from a 2-2 and had the toughness increases from being a human or Phyrexian reduced by 1.
That's a mouthful. That card's got a lot of text on it.
Yeah, let me look that one up real quick so I can speak reasonably.
So let's work backwards since we're on the Subversive Acolyte. But the big one here is these 5 digital only cards being rebalanced are digital only cards that came from the historic jumpstart pack, and all five of them are capable of being just like completely reworded because they're obviously digital only, right? So they gave them the Hearthstone treatment and they said, okay, these cards are either too good or maybe are broken in a combo setting, or in 3 of these cases are not good enough and they wanted them to see some more play because they're like, hey, we like this design and these cards are going unnoticed. So
on Submersive Acolyte, let me circle back to that change. It now gets +1/+1 and lifelink and becomes a human cleric instead of +1/+2. And it gets +3/+2 and trample, and whenever it deals damage, sack that many permanents instead of +3/+3. And it's pay 2 and 2 life to choose one and activate only once.
Yeah, so that guy was...
And it doesn't...
Yeah, go on.
It doesn't end at end of turn. So you can activate it one time, pick one mode, and it's just that thing for the rest of the game.
Right. I feel like this card was supposed to be kind of like one of the kind of the poster cards for the set. It was one of the first ones that was revealed for Historic Jumpstart and was kind of like the look at what we can do. This is one of these new cards that's going to come out in this new set to show off the new types of things you're going to see. These like kind of perpetually like things that are digital only. And this card, like, you know, when you looked at it, it was like, oh, that's like kind of interesting, intriguing. It was like a very good limited card. However, not seeing any play whatsoever, not really something that anyone's giving thought to. So now I'm not really surprised to see it in this batch, knowing that they're going to be giving these, you know, these three cards a second look in terms of, you know, boosting the power level a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So the one black will allow it to be played in a lot of the multicolor decks, which there aren't a whole lot of mono black decks out there. However, the ones that are mono black tend to be like, there are devotion decks out there. So this might be a downgrade in some of those cases, honestly, for the cost to be reduced to one black. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's still a two drop. It's just less devotion. So a little nerf, a little buff.
A little bit. Yeah. But it does fit in Jund. It does fit in Jund better, which I think is kind of interesting, because I think this to me seems like a Jund-like two drop, kind of like a Tarmogoyf-esque slot.
Yeah. It becomes a 4/4 lifelink human for on turn 3 for pay 2 life and 2 mana, or a 5/4 or a 5/5 Phyrexian Totem. So they reduced the transform toughness because they permanently increased the creature's toughness.
Right. Yeah, I'm willing to take a flyer on this guy. I think he's cool. 2 cool. mana 2/3 is decent enough to block a couple of attacking goblins and such, maybe some humans. So
yeah. And I mean, just transforming it on turn 3 into a 4/4 lifelinker is just like, that's usually a big game.
Yeah.
In those aggressive matchups. And you can do it at instant speed, so.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately for Sarkhan, Wanderer of Shiv, I'm not convinced that change is really going to make this guy playable. It's an interesting card, but I don't know. I don't know what to make of this guy. What do you think of Sarkhan, Wanderer of Shiv? I can't think of a home for it in Historic to begin with, but.
I can't even think of the card.
So, all right, I'll read it then. It's 3 in a red. It's a 4 mana planeswalker with 4 loyalty, which is pretty good rate. It has 1/+1 already. It says dragon cards in your hand perpetually gain. This spell costs 1 less to cast, and you may pay X rather than the spell's mana cost, where X is its mana value. Okay. Interesting. Okay. And then its former 0, now +1, is conjure a Shivan dragon card in your hand. And then it's pretty bad. It has a -2, and it has Sarkhan deals 3 damage to any, or to target creature, excuse me.
And this card's unplayable.
Yeah. I think
maybe in a control deck? Where you just want to generate like extra pieces of cardboard to do something with.
Yeah.
Like if you have something that takes advantage of discard and you just discard fodder, like this guy can make Shivan dragons that eventually maybe you just cast.
Yeah. I mean, that's cool, but why not just play like a Shivan dragon, right? Why pay 4 mana draw a card and hope that card is, you know, in that card is a Shivan dragon, right? I don't know.
That's why I'm saying, like, you have to also have a discard mechanic in your deck that, like, takes advantage of discard. Because, like, if you're just creating additional objects, so, like, this is something that you saw a lot in Hearthstone. If you, like, you stopped playing Hearthstone, but, like, I played it for a long time. I just recently quit playing it or haven't just touched it in a while.
Uh-huh.
Just creating additional digital objects is just useful. So, like additional game objects. So, like, in Hearthstone, they created a new card that shuffled 3 legendary minions in your deck that were like super powerful, and then like printed another card that like you could copy that minion and put more of them in your deck. And then there was a minion that revived minions that was of that card's specific tribe. So you could just loop that minion over and over, fill your deck with the
random.
Oh. The randoms was one of the ones that revived that card's tribe. You could just go infinite. So like if you have a discard outlet that takes advantage of extra cardboard,
yeah,
then you could just generate a Shivan dragon every turn, discard it to make a zombie or some nonsense and then profit. Like Cryptbreaker is a good example. Like if you discard a card to Cryptbreaker, you can make a 2/2 zombie. Well, if I can generate a Shivan dragon every turn, I can just make a 2/2 zombie.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
that
like,
card.
That's kind of tricky.
Yeah. That card is very different in terms of like, you know, how you can access those additional objects. I get the like just generating value. And planeswalkers tend to do that anyway, right? So this one just creating matter, you know, is kind of interesting. The bang for your buck on a Shivan dragon is obviously much greater than like a 2/2 wolf token or something. So there's something to be said there, but I'm wondering if go on.
About these objects, because you play Arena and I don't.
Yeah.
So this randomly generated object.
Yeah.
When it dies, does it go to the graveyard?
Or
does it just like disappear?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it goes to the graveyard. I've never played a card where that's really been relevant. The only one that gets played that I've really seen is the Merfolk one, and that one makes a tropical island, so it doesn't go to the graveyard very often. But it is a card, so I would imagine it would.
So, I mean, if that card gets generated, if you have a discard outlet, you can just start reanimating Shivan Dragons.
Yeah, it does say Shivan Dragon card into your hand, so I don't see why not.
Yeah, so if those go to the graveyard, you could just, bin a bunch of Shivan Dragons and start reanimating them.
Yeah.
If you have, a mass reanimation spell.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. Okay.
Just things I think about when I see kind of very unique cards that do something like this.
Yeah. I'm curious as to whether or not they considered the -2 dealing 3 damage to any target as another possibility for an upgrade, too. I don't know if that would be...
I think that might be a too big curved offer.
No, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I guess four mana, 6 damage to the dome is a lot. So.
Yeah, it is.
Okay. All right, then next up is Faceless Agent, and Faceless Agent is the Changeling, 3 mana, 2/2 now. It used to be a 2/1. Enters battlefield, seek a creature card of the most prevalent creature type in your library. So it's going to randomly, it doesn't literally draw, but it will put a creature card from your deck into your hand that is an elf or a goblin or whatever is the most prevalent, and it will randomly select one of those. So this card... I don't know if the extra point of toughness makes it more playable, but it's certainly interesting to have to round out those tribes that are lesser supported. However, I think the biggest issue with it is it's 3 mana. Usually the problems aren't that you don't have enough 3 drops for a tribe. It's that you don't have enough 1 and 2 drops. So I don't know that we're really hurting for this guy, but there might be something here. I don't know.
I agree with you. It needed to be a 2 drop.
So.
They could have even just made an illustrationary, just a 2-mana 1/1 that draws a card.
Yeah.
It would have been totally fine.
All right, and then the last one, or the first one, because we are going in reverse order, is Davriel's Withering and Davriel's Soulbroker. So Davriel's Withering, 1 black mana for an instant. Target creature perpetually gets -1/-2. That was paired with Vesper Lark, and the Vesper Lark combo was basically Vesper Lark, Davriel's Withering, and something that, you know, gained advantage from having a creature repeatedly enter the battlefield. Because you could target your own Vesper Lark with Davriel's Withering, make it a 1/0, or a, would it be a 0/0, I guess, and it would just repeatedly enter the battlefield, die, enter the battlefield, die, because it could then target itself with its ability. And then with Blood Artist, you could drain them out. So obviously a card like this was intended to be a removal piece and not a card that could be a tricky combo piece. So they've fixed that by saying can only target an opponent's creature. Davriel's Soulbroker has a -3 that targets a creature for -3/-3. I don't think anyone was using that on their Vesper Lark, although you could. And with Davriel's Withering being changed, it only seems appropriate to also change Davriel's Soulbroker. So there you have it. It's also being affected.
Agreed. So let's talk about the banned and restricted cards.
Yeah.
Brainstorm and Tybalt's Trickery, anything surprising there?
Well, so the only thing that's surprising is the win rate on the Tybalt's Trickery deck in the representation. So Tybalt's Trickery, it's not surprising at all that it's banned. I think I'm surprised that it took as long as it did to get it banned. But if you look at the meta share for that deck, and it's really only in best of one, honestly, it doesn't really get played in best of three because it's just not even good in best of three. That deck isn't even very good, honestly. It loses to itself a lot. There's plenty of foils for it in the format. Even Mono White Humans has a really good matchup against it because they can play things like Thalia and stuff like that. Just really easy catches for it and just run it out. So That said, it's just stupid that it exists. It's dumb because it's like a one card combo in Historic. It's a dumb play pattern. You know, it's the type of thing that's just like screaming for a ban. So I don't think anyone should be surprised to see it go.
Brainstorm
was already suspended, so it was already on the no-no list, and it was just a matter of time before this was effectively removed from that list, and people could finally get their wild cards back. So when these cards are officially banned, then you get reimbursed for them. When they're suspended, you don't.
Okay, so yeah.
So that card is rare in Historic.
Okay. I just have to ask if it was a common, because if it's a common, that's not a big deal, but yeah, rare wild cards is a big deal.
No, so Memory Lapse is too, and Memory Lapse is now suspended and not banned, so that's one of those ones that's just going to be on the, you know, on the sideline for a while until that officially gets banned and you get reimbursed.
I mean, why is Memory Lapse getting suspended? Help me out here. It doesn't seem like it would be that egregious.
Yeah, I think it's just like an experiment because, like, the blue control decks are just overrepresented in Historic.
That makes sense. And banned Counterspell.
What's that?
And they banned Counterspell, so this is just like Counterspell, basically.
Yeah, Counterspell was like preemptively not allowed with Strixhaven. That was one of the Mystical Archives that wasn't allowed in the format. So this is the only 2-mana Counterspell that you've got, and it's played as a 4-of, like, unanimously in all these control decks. But we've already got Archmage's Charm, you know, and we've already got plenty of other 3-mana spells that'll be worth, you know, considering instead. So there's things at the ready. Yeah. They're just not as fast.
Yep. So that seems like it's a pretty logical thing here. I don't think they'll print a mana leak or anything in Historic. They don't really want that floating around. So
no, I'm for sure.
Good with that.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. I have no more things to say about Historic. I don't know what this is going to do to Historic.
No, I don't either. I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see, but I think it's a good, all good changes for sure. I think the 3 upgrades for those cards are definitely like interesting to like experiment with. And I hope that like people are like now interested in like trying Faceless Agent or Sarkhan. And we'll see, like, if they don't see any change in like results for those, maybe they'll push them some more. Maybe Faceless Agent becomes a 3/2 before the end of this, right? That'd be kind of cool. I don't know. So, anyways, all right, we got to look at Modern a little bit. What do you say?
Yeah, absolutely.
Daryl and I were talking before the cast and identified one big bully in the format, that being Hammer Time. Hammer Time is a deck that has been putting up a ton of results. And I don't know about you, Daryl, but this deck looks like a lot of fun to me. Has just a ton of value. Like, I'm looking at a mana base with exactly 4 planes and everything else like does something, has some utility. I mean, there's some godless shrines in there, right? But like,
sure.
Our mana base is like Silent Clearings and Urza Sagas and Inkmoth Nexuses and stuff, and it's like everything is like part of the plan. It all comes together like a puzzle. It's really incredible. So it's,
I mean, this is not my
your thing.
This is not my cup of tea, but
yeah.
I have a list pulled up that from yesterday that 5-0 to the league.
Yeah.
I'm going to skip from the challenge deck here.
Okay.
Because the challenge deck is a couple of weeks old. So
yeah, why don't you read that list down? Give us some context for this. And then in a second after that, we're going to compare this list to the rest of the meta game. And I'm going to throw some wrenches at Daryl and see if he can like dodge the problems, pivot, dive out of the way. And, you know, just like kind of avoid the sideboard cards that the rest of the format's throwing at them and see how this deck really stands up to these things, because it may be that it's just too damn fast for people to deal with. It may be that it's just too versatile or too redundant. But, you know, that'll be for us to decide after looking at it.
Yeah, sure.
Go ahead.
So this deck is functionally a 2-card combo. Let's talk about the deck itself. Functionally a 2-card combo. Or 3-card, really. Creature plus Colossus Hammer, which is a 1-mana equipment. Target creature, or quote creature, gets +10/+10 and loses Y. Costs 8 mana to equip. But we have the other part of that combo is 8 ways to freely equip Colossus Hammer. Force the Guard is 8, 1-mana enchantment. You can play equipment as if they had flash. And when an equipment enters the battlefield, you may equip it to a creature you control for free. And then Pure Steel Paladin, 2-mana, 2/2. When you have Metalcraft, which is 3 or more equipments, or 3 more artifacts, equipments cost 0 to equip. And then it has, when an equipment enters the battlefield, draw a card.
So that's the combo.
Value.
Yes. Value plus combo. So I'll read the list down here and then we'll get started. I have Aluris of the Dream Den, four Memnite, four Ornithopter, four Esper Sentinel, two Ingenious Smith, four Pure Steel Paladin, four Stoneforge Mystic, two Thought Seize, three Mishra's Bauble, four Colossus Hammer, a Nihil Spellbomb, a Shadow Spear, three Springleaf Drum, four Sigarda's Aid, and then 20 lands, four Concealed Courtyard, three Inkmoth Nexus, four Silent Clearing, four Urza's Saga, five Snow-Covered Plains. Then the sideboard is a Burrington Forge Tender, an Inquisition, two Path, a Pithy Needle, two Prismatic Ending, two Thought Seize, two Sanctifier Embek, two Void Mirror, and an Emrakul Aeon Storm.
All right. So I'm your round one opponent, Daryl. I'm sitting down.
Okay.
I'm shuffling up.
Okay.
Oops, I dropped a card. You see I'm on blue-white control because that card happens to be a Supreme Verdict, and what other deck plays that?
Okay.
Get ready, because sure. I'm about to throw down. Game one, you've got Archmage's Charm coming at you. I can gain control of target non-land permanent with converted mana cost one or less. That sounds pretty devastating for a deck that runs Hammer of the Colossus, or Hammer of whatever the hell it's called. What is that thing called?
Colossus Hammer.
Colossus Hammer, thank you. What are you going to do about that?
Okay. So are we playing Chalice? Or let's start there.
Am I playing Chalice?
Yes.
Oh, well, you see, I am playing no Chalice. No, not in this
No Chalice. No. Okay. So that means I basically get to pretty much ignore you and go fast, because you probably have four paths. If you don't, then you're just playing like some Solitudes and maybe like a couple of Prismatic Endings. So yeah. it's set up like go fast mode here, where you just like play Ornithopter and Springleaf Drum and Sigarda's Aid. And you can get a turn two kill if you have an Inkmoth Nexus, or you can get, you know, two shot them with a flashed in hammer. And then you do have the game plan of Stoneforge or of Pure Steel Paladin plus Stoneforge Mystic if the game goes long. You can tutor up Shadow Spear and gain some life. You can tutor up Colossus Hammer and just vial them in and leverage Sigarda's Aid and Pure Steel Paladin to kind of push that. And then your long game is obviously Lurrus if things continue to go long. But you're just going to try and go faster, really. Get under the Archmage's Charms and the counterspells of the world.
Yeah. So the deck that I'm looking at is actually quite on the slow side. I'm leaning into like a lot of two mana spells, but I've got Prismatic Ending, which is, you know, a one mana spell in a lot of cases in this particular matchup, because I can get a lot of your one drops or zero drops with it. But I am afraid of Esper Sentinel, and I have to deal with that guy pretty quickly, which kind of taxes my Prismatic Endings, because there's a lot of cards I really want to target with it, but I also can't let your Esper Sentinel run amok on me. So no, I'm kind of trying to just like stave off the bleeding until I can like land a Supreme Verdict and like kill off some of your dudes. And then it's like, okay, wait, now he's got an Inkmoth Nexus hanging out that, you know, might just finish me off. So
yeah, between that and Urza's Saga, you have a lot of longer game that you can play between Urza's Saga, Inkmoth Nexus, and Lurrus. You have some space to maneuver.
Yeah. So the list that I'm looking at also has main deck, Spreading Seas. Spreading Seas. So that's kind of interesting. That sort of helps out in this particular matchup. Helps out with just the sheer number of Urza's Saga in the meta these days in general, but plays two parts because I can deal with the Nexus a little bit here too.
Yeah, that's not particularly fun.
So, all right, we're going to game two, though. I'm going to be boarding in some wear and tear. Ouch. I'm going to be boarding in, let's see, what else am I going to be boarding in? Chalice of the Void. I've got a couple of those in my sideboard. And okay. I think maybe I'll try this Sunset Revelry. Is that crazy?
That card's pretty terrible against me. Like,
is it?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, you make a 1-1 soldier, you maybe gain 2 life.
No, I make 2 1/1s. I gain 4 life. Sunset Revelry is 1 and a white for a sorcery. It's like Timely Reinforcements. If an opponent has more life than you, gain 4. If an opponent controls more creatures than you, put 2 1/1s into play. Excuse me. If an opponent has more cards in hand, then draw a card. So I'm probably not going to draw a card.
No, not never drawing card.
Yeah. Gain four, create two chumps.
I mean, that's not totally unreasonable. There are eight flyers, and Shadow Spear gives you trample, I believe. So, like, tutoring up the Shadow Spear is going to make sure you get through those chumps.
Yeah.
But, from my side, it's like, okay, I have some Inquisitions that I can kind of try and slap fight you with, which I theoretically will probably bring in. Feels better against the control deck than, like, some Springleaf Drums.
Yeah.
And then some Prismatic Endings to be able to, like, deal with the namesake Chalice of the Void there that I'm so concerned about. I don't need a Nihil Spell Bomb on that main board. I don't need some Springleaf Drums, really. Like, I'm going a little slower, just trying to generate some value, but maybe the plan is to go fast, so you keep the drums and you start to shave on, like, the Ingenious Smith part of the deck. Like, it just depends on, like, what you really see as the way to handle it. You can maybe cut a land, too. Like, you can cut, like, a Snow-Covered Plains for one of those cards.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I think you won the first round. I'm going to drop after this, so you can mark me down. Good job. Here's your round two opponent. Your round two opponent is similarly not very good at shuffling in... accidentally shows off a Searing Blaze on the bottom of his deck as he's handing it over for you to cut. So get ready, because you're up against some Goblin Guides, some Monastery Swift Spears, and some Eidolon of the Great Revel, which I'm sure you're gonna love. I think Eidolon of the Great Revel is probably your favorite card in this matchup.
It's a little rough.
Yeah. So he's got that. I've got Searing Blaze. I think that one will be fun against you. What else am I going to enjoy doing? I think just burning will be entertaining, in general. Those are going to be my favorites, though. Searing Blaze and Eidolon of the Great Revel. I don't know that my attackers are going to get through as well as they would in other matchups, especially when you've got a 10-10, or a lifelinker. But, we're gonna bank on Eidolon making it really hard for you to live. So tell me what you're going to do about that.
This is the matchup where you're definitely leaning into, like, turn one Urza Saga. So, like, oftentimes you don't want to Urza Saga early because you're sacrificing a land. But this is definitely a matchup where I'm totally willing to not play for the Lurrus portion of the game and Urza Saga on turn one so that I can get the Shadow Spear into play as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm.
If I can get it on a Sigarda's Aid, or I can get it on an Urza's Construct or whatever, like... Maybe you do use Saga on two so you can start making constructs. But, like, your game plan here feels like the Shadow Spear. Like, you can try and mulligan to a very fast hand and hope that your, like, target for Hammer doesn't get picked off. If it does, you're kind of screwed when you try and Sigardizate it, because you're not going to be able to Paladin with Hammer, probably.
Uh-huh.
So in this case, you're just trying to, like, go fast. Either choose to go fast or play as the control deck, leverage the Shadow Spear, and then, like, make some constructs and just kind of win that way.
Okay. Seems legit. I will have a hard time burning those constructs when they're large enough, so that's a big problem. This is going to be a race, though.
Yeah, it's definitely a race. It's all definitely right. A race. You can definitely lose, like, for sure.
So, game two, though, I'm going to be bringing in some Deflecting Palms. And I'm going to hope that you might not think I have them. And we're just going to go for, you come after me with your 10-10. I'll just let you finish yourself off. And I don't have a lot to deal with Giver of Runes and Mother of Runes stuff that I might expect to see out of the sideboard. Those decks used to play a lot of that stuff. But
Not in this list.
Yeah, so I guess maybe I'm not too concerned about that. But I do have Path to Exile in my sideboard, so I would be tempted personally to bring those in, but I might just be dated in my opinions on the whole Hammer Time thing. So Skullcrack may be a consideration? I don't know. Is that worth
really
it?
Afraid of the Shadow Spear, really, is the question.
Yeah, I don't know. Probably not.
So if you're not, then you just don't bring it in. So from my side, we're kind of just hoping to we're like leaning so heavy hard on the Shadow Spear here, because, like, we have a Borington Fortunder that comes in.
Mm-hmm.
We could bring in Path and Prismatic Ending to try and deal with your little knuckleheads that we can tend to block, which I don't hate because Idol on the Great Revel is a very difficult card. We have the Hand Disruption. That is not particularly an exciting card to bring in. Like, maybe you bring in the Inquisition, but I'm not over the moon about bringing in Thoughtseize and trading 3 life for 2 life, you know?
Yeah.
Realistically, if you don't draw one of the Concealed Courtyards, you're taking a pain from Silent Clearing to cast it anyways, so you're going 3 life for 3 life, really. So, and that's just kind of, I think, an error in the construction of this mana base. But Sanctifier Envec is a maybe. Like, it blocks all the knuckleheads and it doesn't die. You can't bolt it. So, like, Sanctifier Envec probably comes in just as a target for Hammer and Shadow Spear that you can't kill. So, like, it forces you to bring in Path to Exile. Otherwise, I get to free equip my Shadow Spear and start going to town. Right. But I'm definitely leaning on, like, opening Hammers of Saga to get the Shadow Spear going.
Yeah, fair enough. And I neglected to mention Smash the Smithereens is a must. Obviously, I'm going to bring that in for sure.
Yeah, this feels like a miserable matchup.
Yeah. Okay, so I think you lost round two, unfortunately. But you know,
it's burned most of the time.
You're doing okay. You're 1-1. So we're going to move on to round three here. And we'll do like two more here. Let's do... we better make it a good one. Let's do... Oh, this is a classic. Okay, your round three opponent sits down, shuffles up, doesn't reveal anything, but you can tell by their playmat that says 1+1+1=7 that they're on Tron.
Oh, okay. Well,
okay. So, what's that?
Fair enough. Are we talking about Green Tron or Eldrazi Tron? Because that matters.
Eldrazi Tron people can do math. I think it's the Green Tron people that seem to be in denial. So it's Green Tron. So yeah, you're going to be dealing with some big mana strategies. So you can basically do whatever the hell you want for a little while.
I mean, basically against the big mana decks, you're just like turbo go fast mode. You just mulligan a hand that can't like turn to hammer.
Yeah.
Is the way I look at it. Just like you are just trying to hammer the hell out of them as quickly as possible. And if you can get them with the Nexus, like if you can like sneak the Nexus in there or like do something to make that happen, like Ornithopter, like if you can set up the old actual turn two kill with like Nexus, Ornithopter, Drum, Aid, and to untap, activate, tap your Ornithopter for hammer, equipped to Nexus, hit him for the old 10 poison, like that's the nut hand there because they can't really do anything about that. But other than that, really, you're just trying to go as fast as possible. Like your opponent doesn't do anything particularly relevant until turn three. One of the big haymaker kind of planeswalkers that has always been a problem is Ugin, and even that on turn four doesn't really do anything because all the cards that really matter, except for like Sigarda's Aid, your enablers are colorless.
Yeah, you got a lot of brown.
And then like so they have Karn, the Great Creator, right? It doesn't really shut off your strategy because you're free equipping with Sigarda's Aid. It's not the activated ability of the hammer. So if you're on Paladin, it causes a problem. But you're mostly trying to lean into Sigarda's Aid. So even if they Karn the Great Creator, you just kind of don't really care.
I'm seeing quite a bit of warping whale in these lists.
So that card's a problem.
Yeah, the card's very good against you, I'd say.
That card is very good. That card is a problem. It kills all of our creatures except for Pure Steel Paladin. And I believe Ingenious Smith. Card, because I don't actually know. Nope, it kills Ingenious Smith too. But yeah, I mean, you're just trying to go fast. And then, like, you're trying to avoid Oblivion Stone. Like, maybe you bring in the Pithenula out of your sideboard for Oblivion Stone. Like, but, like, let's talk about sideboards. So for me, I don't even know if I bring in the Hand Disruption. Like, it's kind of a wash. Like, maybe you disrupt, like, take their setup piece and make them go from turn three to turn four. But you're kind of taking a turn off to do that, so it's a little bit of a wash. You bring in the Needle over the Spell Bomb, just because, like, being able to Needle Oblivion Stone, like, that's probably going to be the most problematic permanent. So you just, like, take that out of the equation. And then... Void Mirror is going to be pretty good as long as they don't find Basic Forest. So you kind of get like a surprise every once in a while, but I don't even think Void Mirror is that particularly good.
Yeah.
Because like they have Basic Forest, they can just cast their Haymaker and it doesn't get countered. So
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of sideboard for Tron, because we have the Karn boards, but we can pop in some of the removal spells, creature removal and dismember, wilt, nature's claims, and things like that.
Sounds like your Swag Tusk. Is this a Thrag Tusk style deck?
One that I pulled up had Thrag Tusk in the main, a bunch of them in the main, which is kind of interesting, but not seeing a lot of sideboard Thrag Tusk, no. That was quite the list, though. I was looking at it was like 4 Worm Coils in the main and 3 Thrag Tusk. They were not losing to burn this time.
No.
So
yeah, you're just always trying to go fast, and like maybe you do that slight adjustment of bringing in the needle, and then the discard isn't putrid. Like being able to just like tempo them out a little bit doesn't hurt. And then, like, maybe you shave, like, the Ingenious Smiths. You're not playing in that. I don't think you're playing the Ingenious Smith game. I think you're playing, like, -2 Ingenious Smith, -2 the Spell Bomb, -2, like, a Stone Forge, and bring in, like, the Disruption and the Needle and call it a day.
Yeah. All right, last one. Round 4 opponent. We've covered Control. We've covered Big Mana. We've covered Aggro and Burn. Let's do a mid-range. So I was looking at the Izzet midrange. That one's pretty well represented, but a lot of the threats are similar because it's like a lot of the blue spells that are similar to the blue-white control deck. So how about Jund instead? Let's look at Jund. So Jund, we're on like the Jund, Darcy, Lurrus type of plan here. We've got like Renin 6. Inquisition will help us quite a bit. We've got quite a bit of Inquisition. Lightning Bolts. Thoughtseize, Unholy Heat, Abrupt Decay, that's 13 right there that all are, you know, anti-creatures, anti-small, you know, anti-your cards.
I mean, this is one where we're, like, pretty hard in the Urza Saga. Like, we're like, we have some shitters in our deck, and, like, Memnite and Ornithopter.
Yeah.
So we're definitely, like, leaning on the other, you know, 14 creatures in our deck to do a lot of the heavy lifting, plus Lurrus. So, like, you have Ingenious Smith, Sentinel, and Pure Steel Paladin, and Stoneforge Mystic are all cantrip creatures, basically. Pure Steel Paladin less so than the other ones, because it only has 5 cards that cantrip off of it, but it's just, like, a combo piece. So you have, like, really 10 things that kind of get you some extra cardboard, plus 4 Urza Saga, and, like, we're going to be in full-on, like, hit your land drops, play Urza Saga last, make Karn Structs, go get the Shadow Spear, like, try and play that game. Or maybe, like, Mishra's Bauble if you're, like, getting to the point where you're looping the Urza, because, like, these are the decks that have, like, Abrupt Decay and stuff like that. Kolaghan's Command is going to be a huge problem. So, like, we might try and grind them out. And then, like, if you see a window where, like, they play a Tarmogoyf, you just, like, all right, let's go for it. Make a 10-10, like, take your windows where you can get them, but know that you kind of have to buckle your seatbelt for a longer game most of the time.
Yeah, I think this one will be grindy as heck, but there's a lot of back and forth with these decks. And honestly, they have similar plans in that, like, they're both, like, Lurrus, Urza Saga engines in both decks. Though this one's got Renin 6, and so that engine has a little bit more gas to it than something like I think yours is a little bit more aggressive slanted. So it's kind of like a, can you like punch him in the jaw when you have the opportunity to do it, versus this one is like, can you just like, you know, sustain long enough to drown them in value?
Yep.
So, sideboard, we just go to some more removal spells. I mean, Jund sideboards are all going to be different variations on, like, Terminates and Thoughtseizes, Abrupt Decays, and things like that. I don't know if Torpor Orb is a consideration. I don't know. I don't think so. Not for your deck. Chalice of the Void might be, though. I think I'd probably put that in.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I could see coming in is, like, -2 the Spell Bomb, maybe -2, like, some Ornithopters or some Drums, and then just bringing in the endings and the paths, like 2 ending 2 paths, just like answers to the problematic permanents that like get in the way so you can't finish the game. Like, if you could convince me that Sanctifier Invec would be playable, just because like between I'm convinced of it, between like Darcy and Renin 6 and Ragavan and basically everything with Tarmogoyf, like it has pro everything in your deck. So it's like, that's like better than some like the random Ornithopters, because like Ornithopter flies, but it loses flying when it matters, when it has a hammer. So it's like, hey, cut like an Ornithopter and a Memnite and play like a couple Sanctifier Invex as your creatures instead. Forge Tender is kind of acceptable if like your opponent has like Lightning Bolt plus Unholy Heat, like you have a few more extra answers to the removal, but like that's about it.
Yeah. All right, so after this hypothetical 4-round tournament, what's your record?
Probably 2-2. I probably lose to Burn, lose to Jund because they have a bunch of removal, and then like beat up on the like blue white player if they don't draw their Solitudes, and then probably definitely beat up on Drawn.
All right, nice. So, what do you think of the deck after playing it?
I mean, it's just not my cup of tea. I would rather play more interactive or more difficult to play, but like I can definitely see the appeal of just like stealing a bunch of free wins by just like hammering people onto.
I think you'd be surprised when you play it out. There's a lot of like interesting lines to it. It's not as like it's not as mindless aggro as you may expect. There's something to it.
Yeah, there's stuff to it, but like I feel like you just get like enough free wins, but like that's good enough usually. Because if you get to hammer on something, like the only thing that's actually seeing a ton of play right now is Prismatic Ending that kills it. Like people have gone to Unholy Heat. They're playing Lightning Bolt.
Yeah,
you know, they're kind of Fatal Push. Abrupt Decay is rare, like so like you're definitely seeing like the things that are going to kill this thing that has the hammer.
Yeah.
Just don't exist, so like you're gonna get a bunch of free wins that way, and then you do have some game with Urza Saga and like all of the various value pieces with like, and it's like some of the other lists I've looked at, like this one's playing Ingenious Smith as its like backup value engine. Another one I found is playing Dark Confidant alongside Esper Sentinel. Extra Steel Shaper's Gift for like an extra tutor for hammer, like so like there's various different ways you can go about like creating value engines with this deck, but like it's sort of like depending on how you see the world with what you want to do, but it's like the free wins are there, so like that's why it's kind of hard for me to like play a mid-range like gun deck in Modern.
Yeah,
because there's just not really a free win for jump. Right, like maybe it's like the Thoughtseize double Tarmogoyf draw is the free win, but even that's not that free anymore. So like, whereas like this Hammer Time deck, it has the free wins, and then you can occasionally play the long game if you have to. But like, oftentimes like you can get wrapped up if they cut down the first creature, because the Pure Steel Paladin is the only way you get those onboard hammers activated again.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I would be interested to try it. I think the deck has evolved to be a little bit more like, you know, spiky slanted. It does seem, like I said, there was more of the kind of fanciness to it when it was first being developed. But I think this it's gone the way of like every deck goes in like competitive Magic, where it's like, let's just make it lean and trim, and like let's just cut it down to like what it needs to just do its thing. And its thing is just bashing someone over the head with a 10-10 or an 11-11 or a 12-12, because it's, you know, 10 plus its power and toughness, but let's be honest, sure. It's not really the creature that's doing the killing, it's the hammer. And there's really not much more to it, so there aren't a lot of bells and whistles like there once were when it was being developed, and there was like, you know, the kind of the fun of like, oh, this would be cool, we could try this, and now it's like, no, let's just get to business, we've got a job to do, let's smash. Right,
let's get down to business to defeat the Huns.
Yeah, exactly.
There's our copyright strike.
So. All right. Well, I thought that was an interesting way to look at it. We're certainly not experts on any of those decks. I don't claim to be an expert on any of those. So my sideboarding advice, take with a grain of salt. I intentionally didn't list all 15 possibilities so that you couldn't go back and be like, well, you should have used this or this. But certainly have enough experience to have a general idea of what to include again in the matchup. So. All right, cool. Well, we'll catch you next time. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, take it easy, everybody.
Goodbye.
Modern Metacall is a production of CardKnockLife.com, where you can find a selection of MTG content, both written and recorded. Looking for deck primers? We've got them. Interested in videos? Try our CKL Play series, where we take the most interesting decks appearing in published results for a spin through MTGO leagues. We've got a team of talented writers specializing in a variety of formats and archetypes. To keep up with Card Knock Life offerings, you can follow us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/CardKnockLifePodcast. Thanks is due to ManaTraders.com, MTGCast.com, and TheDiscCard.com for their support in making this possible, and thank you for listening, commenting, sharing, and reading Card Knock Life content.